Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Good morning, good evening, wherever you're tuning in from. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are all here with me today. We've got another wonderful show with an excellent guest I'm really excited about to bring on. Hey, did you catch my last week's show with Ralph White of the New Center? Reincarnation, I guess, of the Open Center. Really great conversation. I hope you had a chance to catch it. If not, look it up in the archives. All right. Let's get started, as we always do each week, with a blog post from a couple of years ago. And this one, I think, is a really important one, one I talk about a lot with people I work with. And this one is entitled, Life is Lived in the Small, Slow Moments. Many times, we are rushing from one place to the next, or from one project to the next. Sometimes we rush from one appointment to the next. It can feel like this is the normal pace of life. Yet when we look around at nature, we find that is not the case. Nature does not rush. It doesn't move so quickly. Nature is slow. The trees grow slowly. Plants grow and respond to the light slowly. The tides move slowly. In fact, everything in nature is slow, except for people. We rush from our house to the car, to the mall, and back to the car, and back home. Whether we work from home or work at an office, we rush to work to get things done. Sometimes we do not need to rush. Sometimes we do need to rush. Yet in most of life, we can actually slow down. We can move more slowly when we have an appointment. And we can give ourselves more space throughout the day to take our time. Slowing down can be of great benefit to us. We can be more mindful and careful with our decisions. And we can be more purposeful when we engage in something new. So often we are rushing through life. Yet the real juice of life is in the tiny moments we take to slow down. To just sip a cup of tea or stare out the window, to allow ourselves to be lost in our daydreams, or to smell the fresh air as we walk through a park. When we slow down, we can enjoy more of life. We can be more mindful and more intentional when we enter into something new. If we really pay attention to nature, we can see that by slowing down, we are in rhythm with nature. Life does not have to be busy. It does not have to be a busy, hectic experience. Only we make it that way because we feel we have to move fast. When we slow down, life becomes more pleasant to experience. For the magic of life is in the small, slow moments. So I often talk to my clients and the people that I work with about slowing down and the importance of just taking a breath throughout the day instead of just rushing from one meeting to the next, to doing this, to doing that. Because when we're rushing all the time, we don't have time to think, to feel, to be in our bodies, to really be present to what's going on right in front of us. When we're in conversation with someone and they're rapid fire talking, giving us one point after another, after another, after another, it can feel like a fire hose and we get overwhelmed and inundated. And then we really don't get anything out of the conversation. But if we slow down and give ourselves a minute to be mindful about what we're talking about the connection we're trying to make with this other person, that a whole world opens up that we never even realized was there. I remember decades ago when I was practicing public speaking at Toastmasters after college. And one of the biggest pieces of advice people would give someone who would get up there and do their talk was to slow down, to modulate our rhythm. Of course, we don't want to be slow all the time. That can be boring. But to also be fast all the time and gunshot and this and that and this and that, that's not pleasant to the ear either. When we take a moment, when we take the time to just pause and feel into what's going on in the moment, what we're talking about, what we're doing, then we're much more able to squeeze the juice out of life. I just came back from a trip to China with my wife. And there were times when there was a lot of running around and things to do and people to see. And then there were moments where we both were like, you know what? I don't need to do anything today. I just want to relax. I just want to stay home, to stay here and chill for the afternoon. And that was very necessary. And I know that when I go on vacation, when I go to a different place, that it can get easy to get caught up in all the things to do and see. And, you know, you're only there for a limited time. So you want to try and see as much as possible. And over the years, I've really developed this attitude of, you know what? If I don't see everything, that's okay. I can always come back. If I really love it here, why wouldn't I want to come back? So I've really gotten to that point of when I go somewhere, I don't want to do everything. And you know what? If I'm not having that good a time, if I have no intention of coming back, then why would I want to rush and just drive myself crazy doing all these different things? We're busy enough in our day-to-day life that when we take a break, let's really take a break. And this idea of watching nature and noticing how slowly nature moves, that observation came from me taking time and paying attention to what was going on around me. There is so much we can learn from just what's around us. And I'm sure if you're listening to this and you live in the country, in the woods, in a very rural area, and you're surrounded by nature, you probably live this every day. But, I live in the middle of New York City, one of the busiest cities, if not the busiest city in the entire world. So for me, this was a big lesson, a big lesson. So what do you think you can do to slow down in your life? How do you think slowing down can help you in your own day-to-day life to just take it a little easier? Right? We're here to enjoy our life, not let life drive us crazy. But it's up to us. We always have the choice. And look, are there times when we absolutely need to rush? We have to get things done when we're working against deadlines and we gotta do stuff. Of course, I'm not a fanatic. But if you look around at the world, we're rushing way, way, way more than we have to. So this is my message for you today, that life is lived in the small, slow moments. And of course, if you can always find my blog on my personally branded website, theconsciousconsultant.com, or on the station website at www.talkradio.nyc/blog. And if you like my blog, hey, I got a whole book full of them called Everyday Awakening, and you can find it wherever books are sold. Okay, now it is my pleasure to welcome to the show visionary entrepreneur, speaker, and transformational coach, Curtis Morley. Curtis is a six-time entrepreneur, speaker, mentor, and coach, educator, thought leader, mountaineer, and patent holder. Ooh, definitely got to ask you about the patent. He's a Wall Street journalist and a best-selling author who had a number one release on Amazon. Curtis has built companies achieving 20 times growth and acquired 96 of the Fortune 100 companies as clients. He's been Entrepreneur of the Year, 40 Under 40, and on Inc.'s 500 out of 5,000 six times, including Hall of Fame and honored in London with the International Company of the Year Award. He has been heard on over 1,000 radio stations and podcasts by millions of people around the world. Curtis is a contributor to Forbes, Fast Company, Lifehacker, and Inc., and has been featured on Amazon Prime Video, NPR, Apple TV, Bloomberg TV, and multiple news stations because Curtis is a sought-after speaker and has presented at events around the globe. Welcome to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Curtis.
Sam, thanks so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
My pleasure, my pleasure. It's wonderful to have somebody so accomplished and such a thought leader as yourself. I'm really curious, like as a kid, did you have a paper route? I mean, were you like an entrepreneur from like a young age, or was this something that kind of developed later in life for you?
It was from the youngest ages. I went door to door in my little teeny town in Utah and sold greeting cards as I think I was 6 or 7 years old,
Wow.
going door to door trying to earn my bow and arrow kit that I did earn. Happy to say that I made that, but it was lemonade stands, greeting cards. I had my little brother, actually, he loved to act and do plays. I had him and his friends create plays, and then I set up the chairs. I went around to all of their parents and charged them a quarter to come see the show. It's been a lifelong endeavor.
Wow, that's funny. That's funny. Yeah, myself included, when I was a kid, my first thing that I got paid to do was a friend of mine's brother used to deliver the dry cleaning for the local dry cleaner, and he was away one summer, and so my friend was doing it, and he said, "Hey, do you want to do this for a few days?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure." And I made money doing that, and then I kind of got the bug. And then I think when I was a little bit older in junior high school, me and a friend, we used to go around on Saturday nights with the Sunday papers, with the Sunday Daily News, and we'd get a bundle off the delivery truck and we'd go around and sell them individually at all the bars in the neighborhood and charge people
Oh,
like twice what it was. So, I got the bug also, like you, being an entrepreneur at a young age. All right. Well, I want to get into, what your upcoming book is all about, called Counterfeit Emotions. But let's take people on the journey, but we're going to take a quick break first. And so when we come back, let's talk about sort of how you decided to become an author after being a coach, and what you saw and what you observed from working with people that kind of helped you to develop your message. Okay.
sounds great. I look
Wonderful.
forward to it.
Awesome. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Thursday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on talkradio.nyc and all over social media. And we'll be right back with our guest, Curtis Morley, in just a moment.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a purpose-driven individual looking for deeper healing, clarity, and growth? Welcome to the Expansion Room, a transformative space for purpose-driven individuals. I'm Siobhan Larice, host, licensed therapist, and coach. Join me every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
And welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with entrepreneur, speaker, and the number one best-selling author, Curtis Morley. So, Curtis, how did you get into the kind of coaching consulting realm?
So the original, so as you shared in the bio, the original was that I've been an entrepreneur most of my life, mostly working with high-tech companies, starting different organizations that I was passionate about. And when I left my last company, I really had a passion around helping other entrepreneurs, around helping them to be able to say, to not make the mistakes that I made when I was 26-year-old Curtis starting my first company. And that's why I chose to write The Entrepreneur's Paradox. Was truly, I wrote the book for that 26-year-old entrepreneur that was making every possible mistake. And for me, not only did I make all of the mistakes, I made them a couple times just to make sure I got them. I was like, I'm not sure I got that one. I'm going to do it again.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
And so I wrote the book for that purpose, to help those new entrepreneurs that are excited about a passion that they have, that they think they can do good in the world, but they've never built a business before. And like you said, it hit the Wall Street Journal bestseller list. It was a number one Amazon bestseller, and my publisher was pretty excited about it. And we had come up with an idea around, let's do a three book series. The next book was going to be titled The Timeline of Business. Because what I found is, not only does everybody make the same mistakes when they're starting companies, but they make them in the same order. And so if you tell me where you're at in business, what mistake you made last, I can tell you what's coming next in a pretty predictive way. And I was in the middle of that and writing my next book and pretty excited about it. And I got the blessing of having a complete life shift for me. And it came in the form of a lot of pain. And I personally went through a divorce, and I had a dear friend named Jerry who was about a year behind me in his divorce. And Jerry was one of my best friends from college. He was hilarious, could make any room of people laugh just uproariously. And he would come over, and it was kind of funny, Sam, because every time when he'd leave my house, he'd say, "Curtis, I hate you." And I'm like, "Okay, Jerry, why do you hate me?" And he said, "Because you make me cry, and I hate crying." And Jerry was just, he was the life of the party. He was always, he had a humor that just never stopped. And unfortunately, Jerry was going through some really hard things himself, his divorce, some issues with some addictive behaviors and things like that. And it still hurts.
Yeah.
And Jerry left us.
Yeah.
Jerry left us at his own hand. And I think it's important to remember him. This is him, Jerry Williams. And when that happened, I was not okay. I was not okay with how he left us. And I said, this is not okay. I have to do something. And at the time, I was starting to unveil these principles around counterfeit emotions. And the very first one that I discovered was pain versus misery, that pain is authentic. Pain is actually an important, inevitable part of life.
Yeah.
But misery is optional.
Yes.
We get to choose what we do with our pain, if we bury it under the tar and sludge of misery, or if we take our pain and put it on the side of joy and put it on the side of love. And if we do that, then we honor our pain and we turn it into a sacred sorrow.
Yeah.
And Jerry didn't understand the difference between pain and misery. He didn't understand the difference between guilt and shame. He didn't understand the difference between sobriety and recovery. And when all of this happened, kind of in conjunction with each other, I called my publisher and I said, "Hey, I know we're in the middle of this next book, but I need to push pause. And I don't even know if I'll ever come back to that book, because I need to write a book called Counterfeit Emotions."
Wow. All right. We'll get into what are counterfeit emotions in a moment. But I just want to let you know that I can so relate to what you went through, because about 15 years ago, right around the time when, right after I took over the station and the wellness center from the former owner, my best friend from high school and junior high school, committed suicide as well. And
I'm so sorry, Sam.
And again, same thing. He was the life of the party. He was a wonderful friend to be around. He would joke all the time. We would get together and we would laugh about silly stuff until our sides hurt. And I never knew that he had suffered from depression most of his life.
Hmm.
You know, I'd been at his wedding. I had no idea. And it was just a few months before he left us that my wife and I got together with him and his wife, and he told me that he was suffering from depression. I had no idea. And, you know, we talked about it a little bit. He didn't make a big deal of it. We didn't talk about it a lot.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I get this message on Facebook from his brother letting me know what happened, you know, a few months later. And, you know, there's, when it's so unexpected like that, there's such a shock that comes first. And I remember thinking, like, why didn't he come to me if he was in so much pain? Like, there's so many things I have now. There's so many things I do. I could have helped him. But, yeah. You know, when you're in the middle of that kind of pain, you don't reach out. You know, that's the thing. People like myself, you know, expect others to reach out to us, but we don't reach out. And we're the ones who really need to reach out to people. And, yeah, it was just such a shock. And over the years of running the station and doing what I do, I've learned that really suicide touches so many lives. When I took over the station, there was a gentleman, Larry Bloom, who was a divorce lawyer, whose brother had committed suicide. And every year there's this walk, a midnight walk across the Brooklyn Bridge for suicide awareness. And he used to talk about that every year. And then years later, we had a gentleman on the network, who used to do a show with us called Extra Innings that was all about how he lost his older brother and older sister to suicide. Mm. And the thing that saved him was baseball. And you know, he had become like a minor league player, I think, in college. But how his love of baseball was actually the thing that saved him. And from his show, I learned even more about how much. And then I was at a conference. It was actually a conference about psychedelics. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was the person who started Compass Pathways. It was a psilocybin company. And he stood up there and he started off his talk like this. He said, everyone stand up. The whole room stand up. It was like 800 people. He says, okay, if you personally have been touched by suicide, meaning someone you personally know, a close friend, a close relative, committed suicide in the last 6 months, sit down. I see all these people sit down. He says, okay, if it was in the last 10 years, sit down. All these other people sit down. He said, if you know of anyone who got touched by suicide in the last 6 months, sit down. And he goes through all these things. And then by the end, you look around. He says, look around how many people are still standing. It was a handful of people out of the whole audience who had not been touched by suicide. He said, and the point he was making was that because he had lost his son to suicide, that it's something that touches almost everybody's life in this society. Yet it's something we do not honor, talk about, give space for, to talk about. And I wonder if the reason why is what you said before about the difference between experiencing the pain and the misery or suffering that comes with it.
Hmm.
That we can marinate in when we don't truly honor how we're feeling in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Wonderful.
Specifically because of that.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I want to just pause for a moment. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, let's really get into what are counterfeit emotions and what was the kind of light bulb from this experience of losing your best friend that kind of made you see it that way and helped you to really frame things in a way that people don't normally frame. Okay?
Sounds great.
Wonderful. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we'll be right back with our guest, Curtis Morley, in just a moment.
Misalignment within your sales team or with the client stalls deals and creates unnecessary friction for you and the client, resulting in up to 37% lower win rate. If you're in pre-sales, sales, sales management, or sales enablement, and you'd like to increase revenues, win rate, margins, client satisfaction, and stay competitive, this show is for you. Hi, I'm Art Fromm, host of the Making Seamless Sales Show. Please join me live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Linda Marsanico. The A-Train to Sedona is a memoir about my journey to love and compassion. It's also the name of my new broadcast on Wednesdays at 12 noon. When we are spiritual, we embrace possibilities and ideas, which strengthen our mind, body, spirit, health, and wisdom. On the A-Train to Sedona broadcast, I plan to interview guests who embrace these expansive practices. Join us on Wednesdays at 12 noon on Talk Radio New York City.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
And welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. Our conversation went really deep, really quick, going from selling greeting cards to losing our dear friends. So Curtis, you briefly touched upon it, but I really want to get into it, that from this very painful experience, your own divorce, losing your best friend, dealing with this pain, that this idea of sort of counterfeit emotions came up for you. And I'm just curious if you can remember, like, what was the instant, the moment, the light bulb experience that really caused you to see it in this way?
Yeah. The very first dyad or pair of emotions that I discovered or I uncovered was the idea of pain and misery. My entire life, I had thought that there was this big wall, and on one side of the wall was pain, and on the other side of the wall was joy and love. And they were completely exclusive, that you either have pain or you have joy, you have pain or you have love. You don't have both. Mm. And when I got into the deepest pain I had ever felt, and when I lost my friend Jerry, and I realized that this side of the wall was not pain. I had mislabeled this side of the wall my entire life because I thought if I'm experiencing pain, that something is bad, that either I'm bad, my choices are bad, my situation's bad, there's bad associated with this side of the wall, and that's called pain. And when I realized that that wasn't actually pain, that I had mislabeled it because this side of the wall was misery. And misery, by definition, is the absence of joy. Misery is this side of the wall. It is exclusive. But I get to make the choice of what side of the wall I put my pain. I can either bury it deep underneath that sludge and tar that traps it inside, or I can lift it and honor it and have joy and pain at the same time. Most of us think, oh, I'm going to have pain. And then when I'm done with the pain, then I can have joy.
Right.
And when I make it through the pain, then I can have joy. And what I learned was that you can have both at the same time. Yeah. That pain and joy can exist simultaneously, that they don't have to be separate. And one fascinating thing about pain is that pain is one of the few authentic emotions that are not meant to be held. They're meant to be felt. The purpose of pain is to move us to action, and it's to get us to do something. And when we feel that, and when we let it flow through us, and when we have it take us to action, then we say, okay, pain has served its purpose. But what we do oftentimes is the sludge of misery, it traps that pain. And like I said, it's not meant to be held, but it's meant to be felt. And when the misery traps it, that means that it just cycles inside of us and becomes trauma.
Right.
It becomes that trauma. And pain is not supposed to live here. Pain is supposed to move through us. It's supposed to flow through us. Right. But misery, which has two base emotions, blame and shame, that's what traps the pain inside.
Yeah.
And when it's not until we can scrape away the blame and shame that we can let the pain flow through.
You know, reminds me of that old quote from the Dalai Lama that he said, life is pain, but suffering is optional. And I remember when I heard that, I like kind of confused me, and I'm like, huh? If we're in pain, we suffer. What do you mean suffering is optional? Until years later, when I discovered one of my teachers, and he would talk about this, that suffering comes from the stories that we make up around the pain. And that's where the suffering comes from. Like, then it all started to make sense for me. And that then and this is, you know, a lot of the work I do with people is around just feeling. Like, when we just feel the raw emotion, there's no story around it. So we don't have to suffer. We have to feel it because it's in our nervous system. It's in our body, in our, you know, the famous book from Bessel, The Body Keeps the Score. It's in there. It's in the cells, and it's going to live there and stay there. But it doesn't have to control us if we allow, as you say, it to flow through us.
Yeah, yeah, and that is the nature of pain. Pain is actually a blessing, because. Right. You cannot grow without some degree of pain. And people are like, wait a minute. No, I took this class and I learned a lot. Well, pain is a spectrum. Pain says, you know, you've got extreme physical pain. You've got extreme emotional pain, but on the other end of the spectrum is discomfort.
Yeah.
And that's a form of pain. And if you think about the comfort zone, growth doesn't happen inside the comfort zone. Comfort happens. Growth happens in the growth zone, and that's where the pain comes in. And we can either give ourselves discomfort of learning something new or trying something new or building a business or creating a podcast or whatever it is, but then that creates that discomfort at the very least. And so when we look at it in that way, when we say pain is a gift, then it changes the equation entirely.
Right. Because it changes our story around it, right? Yeah. It's like, if pain isn't suffering, if now it's a gift, then I don't have to make up these stories that, oh, there must be something, I'm feeling pain because there's something wrong with me, or I'm feeling pain because, you know, I did something bad or all this stuff. Now we're like, okay, I'm feeling pain because I need to take action.
Yeah. And when we can understand the true nature of pain, that pain is an indicator to take action, we take that action and the pain leaves.
Mm.
It's gone. Whereas misery says, no, no, no. Let's trap that right inside. Let's trap that pain. So it just cycles. So it just goes over and over again. And when we do that, the pain can't release.
Right.
And that's where that's what we call trauma.
Right. That's where we get stuck in the cycle.
The pain that continues. Yeah.
So this was the first sort of pair of the counterfeit emotion versus the real emotion. What other kinds of pairs of counterfeit emotions did you discover?
The second one was that nice is the counterfeit of kind.
Ah.
And this one kind of blows people's minds. They're like, wait a minute, hold on, time out. I've been told to be nice my entire life. What are you talking about? That nice is a counterfeit emotion? And the truth is, yes, that nice is nothing more than a defense mechanism to avoid conflict. If there's any chance of this happening, of this conflict, nice says, I'm going to avoid that at all costs. But kind does something different. Kind says, I'm going to transform conflict into connection. Because anytime there's an opportunity for conflict or confrontation, there's also an opportunity for connection.
Yeah.
That is the breeding ground for connection, is because your life was different than mine, because you grew up in New York City and I grew up in Utah, because we've had different life experiences. That means we can connect in new ways. We can learn from each other. But oftentimes all we see is that opportunity for conflict instead of an opportunity for connection.
Right. Right. It's kind of like we grew up in very different environments, but we had some similar experiences. So there's some commonality there, but there's this sort of rich tapestry of the difference.
Yes.
And I was brought up Jewish. I'm pretty sure you're not Jewish. And, so there's all these differences, but we're still human beings. And so there is always an opportunity to connect on that human level, because there is at least some base common experiences that we can share with each other.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's beautiful. And one of my favorite emotions is curiosity. Curiosity is so transcendent. It is one of the most transcendent emotions. Curiosity, surrender. There's a couple other truly transcendent emotions.
Mm.
And curiosity has the counterfeit of suspicion.
Ah.
Curiosity says, I want to see you. I want to know you. I want to be in your heart. And suspicion says, I'm going to mount evidence against you so that I can make my argument, or I can convict you sometime in the future. Where curiosity just says, I want to see you. I want to experience what you have experienced. I want to know who you are.
Right, right. I want to know what's really going on underneath there.
I love that. It was funny, because the way I've learned about kind and nice is, I had a friend, and 10 years ago, if you would have asked anyone, like, who is Curtis Morley, they wouldn't have said, oh, he's an emotionologist writing a book. They would have said, he is the nicest guy you will ever meet. And I hope to never hear those words again. I really do. Because my friend called and he's like, Curtis, do people tell you you're a nice guy? And I'm like, yeah. Thinking he was going to praise me like everyone else did, because I'm so dang nice.
Yeah.
And he said, the nice guy is the most despicable person on the planet.
Ooh.
I was like, oh man, you totally just set me up for that. You just, and as I dug in, I was like, wow, nice is not authentic. It's not honest. Nice is actually manipulative. And digging into the science of it, the etymology of the word, like the research around it became something that I just poured my heart into, and realized that kind is the virtue, nice is the defense mechanism.
Right, right. We be nice, and I have the same experience as you. But nice is how what we do in order to feel safe.
Yes.
Because at some point in our life, we didn't feel safe and maybe there was some trauma from it. So it's like, oh, I got to be nice so that people won't do this or that.
Yeah. And we try and control other people with our niceness.
Yeah.
We try and control their anger or any type of uncomfortable situation with a smile or with pleasantries or with manners. And it's all surface level where kind will always lean in. And kind will have hard discussions done in love. Nice leans out. Nice says, you stay over there. Like you be way over there and I'm going to have a smile and you're going to have a smile, but let's make sure there's no possibility for any type of conflict.
Right. Gotcha. Oh, I love this conversation. All right. We got to take a break. When we come back, I'm just curious, like, just we don't need to go through all of them, but just how many different counterfeit pairs you've found and what's been the reaction so far as you've talked to people. You've been developing this idea for a while. You've been writing the book. I'm curious, as you've spoken about this in different platforms, different ways, what kind of reaction you've gotten from it. Okay.
Sounds great.
Wonderful. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we'll be right back to wrap it all up with our guest, Curtis Morley, in just a moment.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Ready to serve up success with a splash? Hi, I'm Bruce Kramer, a.k.a. the Corporate Cockroach.
I'm the Renaissance Woman, Angie Snowball.
And I'm your strategy doctor, Dr. Navtej Dasanjh, inviting you to serving up success with a splash.
Join us as we shake things up with real talk and real strategies centered around awareness, action, and accountability.
And yes, there really is a cocktail involved. Please join us and sip your way to success.
Serving up success with a splash, where wisdom meets happy hours. Cheers!
Cheers!
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
So Curtis, we've talked about a couple of these pairs of counterfeit emotions. This is such a juicy topic. We could probably dig into it for hours. Unfortunately, we only have 1 hour for this show. How many different counterfeit pairs of emotions have you found so far? I'm sure they're even more than what you found so far, but how many have you come across so far?
Yeah. When I started this, We actually did several different focus groups, research studies, and we found thousands of emotions, literally thousands. Mm. And it's fascinating because Brené Brown says that when they studied 7,000 people, most people were only able to identify three emotions that they feel: sad, mad, and glad. And that's it. And we found thousands of emotions, and we've distilled them down to 42 different dyads or 42 different pairs of emotions. Wow. And we talked about pain versus misery and kind versus nice. Some of the others are, for example, guilt versus shame.
Hmm.
And guilt in today's world is getting a really bad rap. It's, you know, people are always saying, oh, don't let them guilt you. That's such a guilt trip. And what they're actually talking about is shame. Shame does such a good job at counterfeiting guilt that we don't even know when we're feeling one or the other. And the fascinating thing about guilt and shame is that there's a direct correlation from shame, which is the lowest frequency emotion we can feel, from shame into bullying, suicidal ideation, criminal behavior. You want to get into addiction, get into shame. And Brené Brown, as well as the University of Oslo, did two independent studies. And for the first time, they flipped it. And they said, well, what about guilt? And they found that shame was the way in and guilt was the way out. Guilt is such a beautiful, healthy emotion because guilt says, I hurt you and I have empathy for you. Therefore, I want to repay. I want to make you whole. And that's actually the etymology of the word. It comes from an old English word, gilden, which means to make whole. The feeling of guilt is the feeling to make whole.
Wow. That's something. That's something. I didn't know that. That's fascinating.
It is. And yet guilt says I did something wrong. Shame says I am wrong.
Right.
Guilt says I made a mistake. Shame says my existence on earth is a mistake.
Right. It's the difference between something that's focused, guilt focused on the behavior, whereas shame is focused on the identity. Like it becomes an identity that we take on. This is such a novel way of looking at emotions. I'm curious, you've been working on this for a while. What's been the reaction when you've talked to people about this and you've used it? What sort of has come up for people?
It's been life-changing in so many cases. One of the ladies that took my mastermind on specifically kind versus nice, she said, for the first time in my life, I realize that I have not been kind to my perpetrator. She was sexually abused for years as a teenager. And she said, it's time to be kind, not only to myself, but to him. And she reported him. And it really was a kind act because then he could break out of those behaviors. And he was actually still perpetrating. And it was the kindest thing she could have done because when he was arrested, he was able to stop.
Wow.
And it's been transformational in business. Right now in the U.S., $493 billion in lost revenue is attributed to nice behavior or nice culture in companies.
Wow.
Because people don't want to speak up. They want to be the yes man, the doormat, the placator. So I'm just going to be nice. So I keep my job and the company doesn't succeed.
Right.
And
what would that look like in business? You gave us a personal example of the difference between kind and nice. What would be a business example of kind versus nice?
Yeah, I was having a conversation with a CEO of a multi-billion dollar company. And we talked about kind versus nice. And he goes, Curtis, where were you last week? I had my entire executive team in the boardroom and I pounded the table and I said, stop being nice. I don't want you to tell me my ideas are great. I don't want you to tell me that, you're the best boss, way to go. I need you to tell me truth. And if it's not a good idea, or if there's a critical flaw, I need you to speak up. And there's the Forbes Council in 2023, they did a research study that nice culture or not wanting to seem unnice actually prevented people from reporting safety violations where people would get hurt because they didn't want to be the bad guy that ratted out Joe or things like that. And changing to that kind conversation, that's where it really changes the entire organization, but also the profitability and the revenue. Nice culture stifles innovation. Nice culture doesn't look at market trends. Nice culture just says, I want to avoid conflict, so whatever you say, that's what I say too.
Ah, interesting. Interesting. You know, it's so fascinating because we tend to think of our emotional life as something different than what we bring to work, and we don't think it impacts work, but it actually does. You know, you've given us some tremendous examples of how it can truly impact even the profitability of a company. That's fascinating to me.
Yeah. One principle with leadership is understanding the difference between power and control.
Mm.
Power is authentic. Power is what lives inside of us. Right. Power is what we can do with our choices. And so power lives inside. Control is what we try to do to the outside. And when we can change from a mindset of, I'm going to control, I'm going to be that micromanager, instead of that, saying, I'm going to make the choices that I have the power to make. Mm. And then I'm going to let them, whoever it is, I'm going to let them make their choices. Mm. And I don't have to be attached to their choices or their outcomes. I don't have to be controlling and saying, you have to do this, 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 and this. I can just say, here's my choices, and this is what I need from you. I hope you make those choices too. And then work through in a place of power instead of a place of control.
Yeah. Yeah. Curtis, I could talk on this topic with you for hours, but unfortunately we've run out of time. If people want to learn more about you, learn more about counterfeit emotions, where can they go online? How can they find you?
Yeah. Go to counterfeitemotions.com is going to be the best place. We also have a very active Facebook group called Counterfeit Emotions, and mm-hmm. happy to connect on LinkedIn or any of the social networks. And yeah, love to bring the idea of counterfeit emotions. There's one principle before we end mm-hmm. that I need to bring up, is that there's one emotion without a counterfeit, and only one.
Which one is that?
It's peace.
Huh.
Peace can't be counterfeited. Every other authentic emotion can, but peace stands alone. And not only are there emotional reasons, but there's actually neuroscience behind this as well. That peace is so unique in the spectrum of emotions.
Huh. Interesting. I have to think about that for a while. I'd really sit with that. Peace, no counterfeit emotion. Okay. I'm gonna sit with that, and I'm gonna let you know if I find a counterfeit emotion for it, okay?
Sounds great.
Curtis, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to come on my show. I really appreciate it. I think this is such an important topic. When is the book Counterfeit Emotions coming out?
In May of next year.
Yep. May of 2026. All right. But definitely everyone take a look for it. Thank you, Curtis. I really appreciate you and the work that you're doing.
Thank you, Sam.
Absolutely. And of course, thank you, my loyal listeners, for tuning in each week. Without you, there is no show. I so appreciate each and every one of you. And don't forget, if you did miss any part of today's show, you can always catch the replay on talkradio.nyc and all over social media and all the podcasting platforms, Apple, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, Amazon, wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find the Conscious Consultant Hour. Thank you all for tuning in. Don't forget, later today, coming up our slate of evening shows, Frank About Health, Serving Up Success with a Splash, and now our newest show, Making Seamless Sales with Art Fromm, our newest host. Thank you all for tuning in. Take care, everyone. We will talk to you all next week.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation, Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Linda Marsanico. The A Train to Sedona is a memoir about my journey to love and compassion. It's also the name of my new broadcast on Wednesdays at 12 noon. When we are spiritual, we embrace possibilities and ideas, which strengthen our mind, body, spirit, health, and wisdom. On the A Train to Sedona broadcast, I plan to interview guests who embrace these expansive practices. Join us on Wednesdays at 12 noon on Talk Radio New York City.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.